Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll check in with the Minnesota's VFW Department Commander, and we'll get an update from the St. Paul District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly update from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Military members will be the first to tell you, our families are the reason we are able to serve. Today, I would like to honor a special member of our military family, our mothers. Mothers play an important role in our lives. They are the first to give us love, as well as strength and courage to persevere when the going gets tough. Mothers teach us, at an early age, values that fall in line with values we adopt when we join the military. In the Minnesota National Guard, as in all branches, we have mothers who also serve. They are dedicated, hardworking individuals who balance their military lives and their family lives to serve our country. I'd be remiss without mentioning another very special group of mothers, our Gold Star mothers. These mothers have endured a pain most of us will never know. Their children gave the ultimate sacrifice for our nation. On this Mother's Day, I would like to thank all of our mothers for your support of what we do and your sacrifices while we serve, and it gives us the strength to accomplish our mission.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining us now is the State VFW Commander Frank Pressfield. Commander Pressfield is the 94th combat veteran to serve as the Department Commander of the Minnesota for the Veterans of Foreign Wars. Commander, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Tom. Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Commander, for those that might have missed you earlier in the year when you're on with us, can you tell us a little bit about you were in the Navy, weren't you?
Yeah, I was a black shoe sailor aboard a destroyer.
Black shoe sailor. Not sure I've heard that. I was in the Air Force, as you know. But how did that all go? I think there was a story, as I recall, when you went and talked to the recruiter, they offered you a few different things.
Yes, they did. They asked me, did I want to be a sonarman? I said, no, I don't want to listen to pings. And they said, do you want to be a radioman? I said, I don't want to make phone calls. And they said, well, you qualify to be a fire controlman. I said, I don't want to put fires out either. And they said, you get to shoot the guns. I said, sign me up.
Sign me up? Where do I go? So you served on the USS Allen M. Sumner. And I understand that you were on her from May 1966 to July 1969 and saw some service in Vietnam.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. We were on Sea Dragon operation over in Nam off coast of North Vietnam. That's classified. You know, we weren't really up there.
Doesn't that make you a Blue Water Navy man?
Yep, Blue Water Navy.
So where's the black shoe come in?
That's what they call the guys that were topside. Black shoes.
Up able to see the sunshine.
That's a nice word for deck ape.
All right, Commander. I'm learning more about the Navy than I ever imagined today.
I was not part of the black gang down in the hole.
Now, when did you join the VFW?
Joined the VFW on the 24th of August, 1974.
That's a few days ago, isn't it?
It'll be 40 years this coming August.
And worked your way all the way up to the department commander, which is a state commander for the state of Minnesota.
Yes.
And you've been in office for almost a year now.
I have 11 months. I will go out of office exactly 1 month from today.
And there's a smile on your face.
Yes, there is.
Been a busy year, Commander?
Yes, it's been a busy year. It's been a tough year and a busy year and an enjoyable year all rolled into one.
Well, I'm wondering how many miles you put on and how many posts you visited.
Don't ask about the miles.
Did you see quite a few of the posts?
Yes, I did. I'm still seeing a few of them. You can't see them all, but still seeing a few of them.
So there's a few places in Minnesota that were new to you then.
Yes. Yeah, I've been into some posts that I always wondered about, to be honest with you.
We're speaking to the state VFW department commander on Minnesota Military Radio. Frank, as you know, I'm a member of the VFW over in Hopkins, been there for a long, long time. I'll bet you, you've seen some posts around the state that you never dreamed of.
I certainly have. In fact, I was just, I was in Carlton this last weekend. I'd never been in that post. I've been by it 100 times, but I just never had been in it. And I was up there for 3 days, and I was up at Cook for their 75th anniversary here 2 weeks ago.
So how are veterans that belong to the VFW post? Are they pretty healthy out there? How's your membership? Pretty good?
Membership is, and I'll go cut right to the core. Our membership nationally and our membership statewide, probably one of the biggest problems that we do have is the age, because about 1/3 of them are 80 years old. That's a problem.
So we're losing a lot of the World War II guys.
Absolutely. I mean, you lose 1,000 a day nationally, and we take I hate to say the word, take a hit on it, but we do at the post level. My own posts, I think this last year, we lost about 30.
It's getting kind of rough, isn't it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to get that many coming back, let's say, you know, returning from combat, because that's not what they're looking for. You know, they're coming back. They've got a lot of problems when they return. So you've got to take it very, very slow with them.
Now, when you and I joined back in the mid-70s, when we came back from Vietnam, all the World War II guys and the Korean guys were saying, where's your Vietnam buddies? How come they're not joining?
Yeah, that was a problem, you know. And it, in fact, they didn't even, a lot of them didn't want you. They just flat didn't want you. Now the VFW veterans, they're the hierarchy nationally, statewide, postwide.
The Vietnam era.
Uh-huh.
So are we saying the same thing today? Where's the Persian Gulf?
That will come in time. It really will. It will come in time.
They got to get home, get married, raise their kids, go to college. They'll come later.
And a lot of them got to get home and get a job.
Yeah, you're right, sir. What is your view of veterans' health care in Minnesota? Is it one of the big issues?
In Minnesota, we're pretty proud of the health care that we get through the VA system here in Minnesota. I know St. Cloud, Minneapolis, and we kind of... VFW, we chide in on Fargo and Sioux Falls because they handle a great, great load for us on VA health care. And they do exceptionally well. They really do. I'm an outpatient myself at St. Cloud VA, and I couldn't be happier with that facility, really.
And the Minneapolis facility is extraordinary.
Absolutely.
There.
You bet.
And we got one in Ramsey, the open one down in Austin, and there's one opening up down in Shakopee. So should be getting a lot better for the Twin Cities veterans, at least.
I think the biggest concern we have statewide, though, is rural health care. I made a commitment to a number of posts up in the northern tier of the state to chide in on rural health care, because that's a problem. Because we get... veterans that need something as simple as a urine test or something like that, and they have to get in a van, and they may have to drive 3 hours to get to a facility just to do something as simple as that. Why can't they just go over to the local hospital clinic, do it, bill the government? Check's not going to bounce.
It's a pretty good question, Commander. What's the answer?
simplifying the system. You know, simplifying the system, because if I take a man that's over 80 years old, stick him in a van and haul him down 200 miles just so he can go see a plastic cup, that's ridiculous.
He might not survive the trip.
He might not.
Well, there's one issue that's coming from rural Minnesota, and I'm sure there's many more.
Yes.
Commander, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk a little more about veterans' health care and veterans in crisis. We're speaking with Commander Frank Pressfield on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been visiting today with the state VFW commander, Frank Pressfield, and we've been talking about the VFW posts all over the state and veterans' health care and transportation. Commander, while we're on the transportation issue, I know that as the department commander of VFW, you serve on a board called the Commander's Task Force.
That's correct.
Which includes the commanders of each of the veteran service organizations, the 9 that are authorized, American Legion, DAV, Purple Heart, and so on. And you must work closely with the Minnesota Disabled American Veterans, because they work hard on this transportation issue, despite the fact they're bringing our old veterans 2 or 3 hours to the hospital.
Yes, and Ed Du, the chairman of the task force, is the commander of the DAV.
Mm-hmm. And they seem to do a great job on that transportation. So do you bring back some of those comments you get from your outstate posts and talk about those at the commander's task force?
We always do. We always do, because it's just such a critical issue, you know, of getting people to where they need that care. And that's, all of us have the same feeling about, you know, don't take the veteran to the care, bring the care to the veteran.
And have we made some inroads on that this year?
We've got some legislation in the pipeline in Washington to that effect, yes. And when I was in Washington in March, that was one of the first things. Every time I'd talk to either a congressman, senator, or one of their aides, you know, it was the first thing I said. Every time I visit a post, anytime I visit with them, first thing out of their mouth, rural health care, first thing.
And the problem, how can we make it more efficient? How can we make it easier on those veterans to get some assistance close to home?
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a big job, Commander. You could probably work on that for the rest of your life.
Absolutely.
Commander, I know you had some comments about veterans in crisis. We've had a lot of folks from the VA hospital on the show, and they've done some studies, and most people come back from deployments, or when we served our tour of duty over in Vietnam and those things, most of us come back and we're changed, but we're able to cope and we're able to get things done, but there's a small percentage that really have a problem with, they've been in combat, things happen to them. This isn't a party when people are deployed, it's war.
It's a situation, you know, you get multiple deployments, starts working on the psyche. I lost my job, I can't get it back, starts working on the psyche. The combat situation starts working on the psyche. After all of these things, over and over and over, veteran comes back, his mind is very fragile. It's very fragile, you know, and it doesn't take a lot for some veterans to crack under the strain, really.
Commander, the VA healthcare system's come a long way in the last 40 years since we served.
Oh, well, please.
They understand the problems, I think, and they've got programs to help our veterans, but the big issue, I would guess, is got to get them there. Got to get them in the program so we can get them.
You got to get them in there. You got to get them. I've told so many people that I've talked to, you know, that says, well, how do I get it? How do I get care? First, I said, you got to get signed up. You got to get in the system. You got to get in. We know you need it, but you got to get in it.
And Commander, the way to do these things, we've had on the County Veteran Service Officers many times in the last few years, and the first place for veterans to start is go to the County Veteran Service Officer. They can help them process the claim. But then if they need an advocate and they're a member of the VFW, then you've got people there to go to bat for them, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you work hand-in-hand with the County Veteran Service Officers and do whatever's necessary to get that help for those veterans in crisis.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Without a doubt. We have so many, you know, we have so many that have other problems besides the crisis situation. A lot of them are, they've got health issues that they didn't know about, that they need assistance on. And a lot of times they've got a crisis can raise its head because the situation in Washington is a paper versus technology issue. We're still messing around with paper. In the modern age,
when we should be taking care of the patient,
where they're sitting there, I've actually had veterans at the VA come up to me and start crying and say, "I can't get the help because they're looking for this paperwork." And somebody ought to be able to press a button and transfer the records to the hospital.
Well, we certainly hope it works that way, but
I hope so.
It is paper, and the County Veteran Service Officers and your advocates from your office are working very hard to try to get that care to those veterans as fast as we can, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Commander, I noticed you also had some things you wanted to talk about on the MIA issue.
Well, you know how far that goes back for me and my family, because I did lose an uncle in World War II. We did find him 60 years after the fact that he was killed. And it is such a tenuous process of finding MIAs. We have to accept the fact that the ones we're looking for are, you know, they're probably deceased. I would say they are deceased. And finding them and finding their remains where they're at is so tenuous. On my uncle's case, it took them 10 years to find his plane. 10 years. They knew where it was at, generally, but it took 10 years to excavate the site.
We're speaking with the Minnesota Department Commander from the VFW, Frank Pressfield, on Minnesota Military Radio. And Commander, that ties right into your commander's project. You want to tell us about that?
Well, my commander's project this year is called Bent Star Project, and I'll put a slash after that and say Bent Prop also. Bent Star Project is the fundraising arm of this project. The Bent Prop part of it is the actual excavation, where they go out and hunt for the actual sites. They do not disturb sites when they find it. I want that understood. They do not disturb sites. They find them, and then they notify JPAC to do the actual excavation. That's been a problem for civilian people that have gone over and found sites. They disturb the sites. And as far as we're concerned, a site, that's a burial. It's not to be disturbed. And so we let JPAC take care of that.
Now, Commander, is the focus of your commander's project Bent Star and Bent Prop, is that the Pacific Theater from World War II?
Yes, Palau area, the Republic of Palau, which was a hotbed during when MacArthur was trying to make his advance toward Japan, the home islands. Palau was they wanted them islands for landing strips and what have you. Marines were there on the southern end at Peleliu, and the Japanese were on the north end of the island, what have you.
Now, do we have any idea what the MIA count is from that?
There was 200 planes lost. We know there were 200 planes lost over that particular area. Well, that's 1,000 crewmen.
So there's still 1,000 we're looking for?
Just about 1,000 that we're still looking for.
Now, you told me we were talking before the show that they found two planes recently?
Recently, within the last 60 days, they were over there on their 14th expedition, and they found two more planes, and they have notified JPAC of where they found them. Been looking for them for a long time. One's an Avenger, crew of three, and the other's a Hellcat fighter.
So now they know where they are, and then they go back and...
They go back and actually excavate the site.
So how many crewmen are you hoping to find?
4 to 5. 45. I think it'll be 4.
It brings some nice closure to those families, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
Now, Commander, you're coming to the end of your year as Minnesota's department commander for the VFW. Looking back on the year, did you get done everything you thought you were going to get done?
Of course not.
And if you had to do it over, would you do anything differently?
Probably would. Probably wouldn't have worked quite so hard. I would have worked smarter.
Well, we all hope we can do that. Well, it is, do you look back on it as a good year? I know it's been busy for you.
And it's busy, and today is just an issue. I'll be on the road here in a few minutes, heading down to Mankato State to Minnesota State at Mankato to make an award there tonight to a new officer. It'll be something next week and something the week after. I mean, right up until the time I pass the gavel.
So you're going 100 miles an hour, and then all of a sudden you're going to stop.
I was, the last 2 days, I've been up at Camp Ripley, the turkey hunt.
So it sounded like you had a good time up there.
It was a good time. It's great. I know that Camp Ripley's bigger than what I thought it was.
53,000 acres. You must have covered a few.
I thought I was on every road there. They said not all of them, but most of them.
Commander, we just got about a minute left. Any final thoughts for our listeners about your year as the department VFW commander in Minnesota?
Everyone that supported me during this year, I want to thank them for that. Anything that we accomplished, I'm grateful for that. But all in all, I think I'll go out of the year feeling that we did the best we could, and I'm content with that. I know there's some good officers coming up behind me. and will be well served by their dedication to the organization, too, and to veterans overall.
Well, Commander, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show a couple times this year. Looks like you've had a great year from where we're viewing it, and I'd like to thank you for joining us again today.
Oh, I appreciate it so much, Tom. Thank you.
That was Frank Pressfield, the Minnesota VFW Department Commander on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be back with an update from the St. Paul District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in just a moment.
Hi, this is Bill Popp of the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. An Army squad is made up of 8 soldiers, and when the squad is on patrol, each soldier is dependent on each other for safety. When a soldier is distracted because of a financial crisis with the family back home, that puts every soldier on the squad at risk. The Minnesota Military Family Foundation helps turn a bad situation into a positive one. The foundation provides financial support during a financial crisis at home. This helps re-energize the soldier. The soldier feels the financial burden lifted and has feelings of pride because of the support from the community at home. When the soldier is no longer focused on the financial crisis at home, the soldier is able to stay engaged in the mission and do his duty to protect other soldiers in the squad. When we help one soldier, we're helping all soldiers. When we help one military family, we're helping all military families. If you're in a position to help, please donate. Go to MinnesotaMilitaryFamilyFoundation.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll meet the commander of the St. Paul District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shalito.
Today, I'd like to spend a few moments recognizing mothers across Minnesota. These mothers might be veterans, they might be currently serving, and in harm's way, or they might have suffered the loss of their son or daughter in service to this country. This is a time when the community comes together to acknowledge and thank mothers for their love, guidance, and nurturing. The influence of mothers has a tremendous impact on families and society overall. Whatever your situation, I want to thank you for the role you have played in the lives of our children and families across Minnesota. On behalf of everyone here at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and the 370,000 veterans across this great state, I wish you a fun and joyous day of celebration.
Thank you, Commissioner Shalito. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is the commander of the U.S. Corps of Engineers St. Paul District, Colonel Dan Kaprowski. Colonel, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate you having me.
Sir, I remember we had you on the show. You were on the phone and you were traveling somewhere. And from talking to you earlier, it sounds like you're traveling all the time. But thanks for joining us in the studio today. Colonel, can you tell us a little bit about your career? How long have you been in the military?
Sure. I've going on 24 years now. I've been in the Army. I was commissioned out of Boston University. I was an ROTC guy myself. And it's been, you know, kind of a typical Army career since then. I was a platoon leader up at Fort Drum, New York, so I'm not completely unfamiliar with cold weather. And from there, I moved on to Germany, where I spent a few years. My immediately previous assignment to this, I was at the National War College, and before that, I commanded a combat engineer battalion out in Hawaii. So, you know, I've been predominantly a combat engineer for most of my career. This is really my first gig with the Corps proper, and it's been an eye-opening experience, I'll tell you that much.
So you were assigned to the Schofield Barracks in Hawaii.
I was, yeah.
Historic place, isn't it?
It is, yeah. The units out there in Hawaii after Pearl Harbor were involved in fortifying the island against what they expected would be a Japanese attack on Oahu that never came, obviously.
Not only did they have to clean up after the mess, they had to get ready for another attack. I imagine that was fun to be out there. And then your latest assignment is the St. Paul District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Is that something that you put in for, or is that something you're chosen for?
It's something you're chosen for. It's actually kind of a combination of the two. You're selected to command a unit, and then you offer a wish list of where you'd like to go, and they send you wherever they need you. So
Colonel,
it's a little bit of both.
We just got done with the toughest winter we've had in about 10 years up here in Minnesota. Did you really put in for Minnesota?
I really did. It was high up on my list. There were things about the place that attracted us. Weather was not one of them, I got to be honest with you. But, you know, a Corps of Engineer headquarters are in a variety of communities around the country. And as I think most of your listeners probably know, Minnesota offers a lot of things that are attractive. Good schools, nice communities, that sort of thing.
And Colonel, how many people are under your command over there?
We've got about 600. The work force workforce contracts and expands a little bit with workload, but 600.
Now, is that a mixture of military and civilians?
It is almost all civilian. There are five of us green suiters over there in the office, and the rest is civilians spread across the better part of five states.
So what do those people that have been there for 20, 30 years think about having a new commander every 3 years, sir?
I think the reactions run the gamut a little bit. They understand. For those that have been there a while, they get it. There's a ramp-up period where the new commander is always trying to figure out what the heck is going on. And then we spend about 2 years where we actually know how to get to our office and do all the things that we've got to do, and they put up with us.
And then off you go like Colonel Price to Afghanistan or somewhere else. So you've been there about a year now, and Colonel, this time of year, we're usually talking about some pretty serious floods, but despite the fact we had a lot of snow and a tough winter, it doesn't sound like there's too much to worry about.
You know, I knock on wood every time I say this, but so far, so good. We are, I guess the best way I would say this is we are cautiously optimistic. The tough winter actually may have helped us in this respect because it has slowed the thaw process. We've had some freeze-thaw alternating cycles, and so on the red predominantly where we were worried about, we remain cautiously optimistic. And I guess it's really going to depend now on how much rain we get moving on through May and June. Some of your listeners may already have been affected by this, but we did have to close the locks and dams, the upper three in the cities here because of high flows on the river. But we really don't anticipate any major flooding out of that, and we think they'll be open to commercial traffic here in the next day or two. And once flows get down to a reasonable level, we'll reopen them to recreational traffic. But so far, so good. That's about been the extent of the flooding problem.
So that was a combination of the winter melt and then a heavy week of rain, I would guess.
That's right, yeah.
Colonel, do you go through an annual cycle of training and preparation for the spring floods?
We do. We try to prepare as best we can. As you mentioned earlier, most of the staff's been there for a really long time, so they've been through this, many, many times. We run tabletop exercises every year to get ready for how we would respond in the event of a flood. And then we work very closely with partners, most notably the National Weather Service, to kind of keep track of a bunch of different things. And the data that we use to account for the potential for flooding is pretty impressive. Everything from soil moisture going into the winter to the moisture content in the snow that fell. The scientists put it all together and come up with a forecast that so far has been pretty accurate. I've been very surprised by that.
So you've really got a pretty good idea of what might or might not happen.
Well, we think we do. Mother Nature wins, but we think we have a pretty good idea.
And you do some training with the Minnesota National Guard and local authorities, and I'm sure up in Fargo and the Red River area.
Yeah, our emergency managers and state and local emergency management officials usually keep in pretty good contact.
So they know each other and they know how to contact each other, and you know where all the resources are in case you have to pull somebody in.
Absolutely. And, some of the places where the district has had to act more in terms of disaster response, those guys know our people better than at other places. But, yeah, we try to keep our finger on the pulse.
We're speaking with the commander of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, St. Paul District, Colonel Dan Kaprowski on Minnesota Military Radio. Colonel, one of the things, I grew up here in Minneapolis, and we always hear about the floods, but we always hear about the Mississippi River, and there's always seems like there's some work being done out there from dredging to the locks to other things. What kind of shape's the river in? Is it? Are you on schedule, or has the budget cuts caused things to be delayed?
Well, in terms of scheduling, we had a really late start to the navigation season this year, a week later than last year, and last year was late. We usually see the first tug make it up to the cities late March, and this year it was April 16th. Other than that, I think so far so good. We have the advantage, actually, of, again, this is another place where our weather actually helps us out. We're able to, because navigation stops, to completely dewater and do an overhaul on one of our locks every year. And what that does is it prevents unscheduled outages. So in terms of our part in navigation, which is really dredging the river and maintaining the 9-foot navigation channel and then our 13 locks and dams between the cities and Guttenberg, Iowa, we're able to keep that moving along pretty well. We've got a couple of places where some of our industry has told us the river's getting a little bit shallow, and so we'll target that for dredging. But otherwise, the river's in pretty good shape right now.
Colonel, we've had a couple of years of sequestration, and now we've got a budget in place for this year and next, and sequestration's waiting for us out there in the future. Has that caused any of your maintenance projects or any of your projects to be delayed with budget cuts and those type of things? Are we pretty much up to snuff or are we behind?
When you talk about maintenance is one of those areas where, you know, there's always more that can be done. And so we are keeping things open. We are keeping things moving, but, you know, hard to say we're behind, but there's certainly, you know, quite a bit more maintenance that we could do if we had more money. It's not necessarily a function of sequestration so much as just budgets are tightening across the federal government. And so it's you know, something's got to give, and that things that are not immediately pressing are often the things that give.
So does that mean that you've got a whole list of things you'd like to do and you have to prioritize them and figure out which is the hottest spot?
Yes, that's exactly what that means.
So I would guess that fills a lot of your time.
It does. And I have, you know, I have lots of good people with lots of experience doing this who make a lot of recommendations, but we do spend a lot of time figuring out what needs to happen first.
We're speaking with Colonel Dan Kaprowski, the commander of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers St. Paul District on Minnesota Military Radio. Colonel, we have to take a short break, and when we come back, I want to talk about some of the other things that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers does in Minnesota. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Tom Lyons, founder and principal partner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities mergers and acquisitions advisory firm where we help business owners to plan, prepare, and execute a strategy to complete the deal. When I'm not hosting Minnesota Military Radio on this station, I'm hard at work helping business owners with their exit strategies. If you're interested in selling a business, please give us a call at 763-231-4200 at Phalon Partners Limited. We've been bringing buyers and sellers together since 1985 and would welcome an opportunity to help you. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been visiting today with Colonel Dan Kaprowski, the commander of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers St. Paul District. Colonel, we always talk when we talk about the Corps of Engineers about flooding and dredging and all of those things, but we've learned over the last few years that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is responsible for a whole lot more, including management of a lot of recreation areas.
Yeah, we have a pretty broad mission set. Really, there are, you know, if you count them, there are about seven primary missions that we worry about. The first and, you know, most important priority of the Department of Defense is still support to overseas contingency operations. Navigation, which we already spoke about. We do flood risk reduction, environmental engineering, disaster response, which I think is where a lot of people see us, environmental regulation, and then recreation is one of our missions. And in that particular respect, we operate, the St. Paul District alone operates 49 recreation sites across five states, North Dakota, pieces of South Dakota and Iowa, Minnesota and Wisconsin. And they range everything from, you know, small boat ramps to full service campgrounds. And I'd like to highlight that the full service campgrounds we've got Ogalle and Black Hawk Park in Wisconsin, the Mississippi Headwaters up in Minnesota, and then Lake Ashtabula over in North Dakota. So lots of great opportunities for people to get out there and enjoy core sites. And what I think most people don't realize is that the Corps of Engineers is actually the biggest provider of outdoor recreation services in the nation. More visitors than the National Park Service every year.
First time I heard that, I couldn't believe it because, as I said, I've grown up here in the Twin Cities and I never heard about any of this stuff. And you really have a diverse group of people, a good group of people over there, and a lot of stuff to do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, something else that I would put out there for folks is for active duty military right now, we waive our day use fees at most of our facilities for active duty military and their families. And if you're coming back from deployment, camping fees are waived as well on a first come, first served basis.
Now, Colonel, is there a website or a page that our military can go to find out where your facilities are?
They can go to the Corps webpage to find out where our facilities are. And they can call 1-877-444-6777, which is the National Recreation Reservation Service. And that's where they can make those reservations if they want to take advantage of some of the fee waivers.
And if listeners want to go to the Minnesota Military Radio Facebook page, Sergeant Ben will put up the links and the phone numbers, and any of our military or returning military want to take advantage of the Corps of Engineers recreational facilities, please go take a look at that and give them a call. Colonel, I know that you're traveling all the time and we've got your district, but do the other districts around the country, do you share resources? Were there hotspots or emergencies? Do you travel to help with that too?
We do. You know, Hurricane Katrina is probably the most obvious example in the last decade or so. I think every district in the Corps of Engineers was involved in some way in the Hurricane Katrina response. And we, right now, about 40% of our engineering and design work is done in support of some other district, and I think that's probably pretty typical of how the Corps of Engineers is operating right now nationwide. It's a very collaborative organization, and it's an organization that shares a lot of resources. You know, part of that is it helps us save taxpayer money, but part of it is also because we get a lot more bang for our buck, a lot of expertise when we share across districts that way. We share also with our other government agency partners, Fish and Wildlife Service. We work an awful lot with our state departments of natural resources. It's running the wetland projects that we run and the other things that we do. It requires expertise from across government.
So it crosses agencies, and you're constantly dealing with your counterparts and trying to cooperate and become as efficient as possible.
Absolutely, every day.
Colonel, we've got about a minute and a half left. You've been in this command for about a year now. As you look back and at that year and look forward to the next 2 years, what do you see?
Well, I'll tell you what, it's been a busy year, and people say you learn something new every day. I think I've learned 100 new things every day. It's been drinking through a fire hose, but I've been struck by the professionalism and the expertise of the staff at the district. These are dedicated public servants who are really trying to do good things for the citizens of this region, and I would just encourage everybody listening to take advantage of that, you know, and I talked about the recreational opportunities. Get out there and enjoy them. They're there for you. Just be safe while you're doing it.
Colonel, I hope your second winter coming up this fall in Minnesota is a little easier than your first here in Minnesota. We usually have a lot of fun up here. About 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts for our listeners, sir?
Well, you know, the last thing I'd like to say is I would just like to say Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there, and particularly to the Gold Star mothers. You know, the country can't ever say or do enough to thank you and express our sympathy for the sacrifices that you've made for this country. And so Happy Mother's Day to all of you.
Colonel, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
It was Colonel Dan Kaprowski, the commander of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers St. Paul District on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is the director of the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, Director Patrick Kelly. Director, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. It's good to be with you.
Director, I was out there last week, and even though I didn't park in it, I saw the parking ramp was up and operating.
Well, it's been great. So it opened on March 17th on St. Patrick's Day, and you know, we still haven't reached capacity, but veterans slowly but surely are finding their way in there, and it has really relieved a lot of the parking pressure around the rest of the campus. So it's been a big success so far.
Well, I thought as long as I was healthy and I could walk, I'd go out and park in the back and leave the closer
well,
ones
you know,
to the other
boys.
You are
a veteran. You're welcome to park there, so I hope you take advantage of it next time.
All right, sir. I know you've got some events coming up, and we've got another clinic opening.
Yeah, on the 16th of June, Tom, at 9 o'clock, we're opening our 13th probably one of our last community-based outpatient clinics, for a while, in Shakopee. And so, again, the program starts on Monday, June 16th at 9 o'clock, and we're going to have some speakers and some tours and open house and give the veterans in that area and others that are interested a chance to see our newest clinic, which is located at it's at Town Square Plaza there in Shakopee at 1100 Shakopee Town Square Plaza. And that's going to be our second clinic to open in a couple months. You know, we opened Albert Lee since we last talked and had a terrific event there in April. We had over 450 veterans attend that event. So great opening in Albert Lee, and I hope we can replicate that on the 16th of June in Shakopee.
Director, are veterans in southern Minnesota going over to Albert Lee? Is that filling up quick?
Yeah. I mean, we haven't gotten all of our staff into the clinic yet, and so I think eventually we will get more assets in Albert Lee. But so far, the Albert Lee folks and people around southern Minnesota in that area have been very receptive to this new clinic, and we're going to have podiatry and mental health and in addition to primary care and imaging and other services there. So it's going to save a lot of road time for a lot of our southern Minnesota veterans. So, it's getting busy.
And, Director, I think you've got another event coming up later in June?
Yeah, Tom, the other thing I wanted our veterans to know about is on the 25th of June, from 2:30 to 4 o'clock, we're having our annual research day. And what's unique about that is that we are focusing this year on topics of interest to our younger veterans. And so we're going to have presentations and posters related to pain, traumatic brain injury, post-traumatic stress, and a variety of other issues focused on our OEF veterans. And we've coordinated with several of our OEF, OIF service officers in helping us develop the program. And, again, what we think will be of interest to our younger veterans. And so, again, that's Wednesday, the 25th of June. It's going to be at from 2:30 to 4. And of course, plenty of parking in the parking ramp, and it's going to be in our medical center auditorium. So I hope a lot of our younger veterans can make it.
Director, we've got about a minute left. How's the remodeling coming at the Minneapolis VA Healthcare?
We're not finished, Tom, but it is coming along nicely. And so we think by the end of July, or certainly by the first part of August, we'll be done. So moving a lot of services that veterans have previously had to go through the facility to get to, business functions, eligibility, that kind of thing. We're moving them down to the flag atrium. So it's going to be an improvement. It's been a little disruptive, as new projects are, but it's going to be worth it. And that's going to be done, like I say, later in the summer.
Director, about 30 seconds left. As you look back since you took over as director of the Minneapolis VA healthcare system, are things going as you planned?
You know, Tom, they're going better than I had hoped. One of the things that I have learned, and I'll be very brief, is that, you know, we have some unbelievably creative and innovative and hardworking and dedicated staff who are committed to the greatest mission in the world, which is serving veterans. So it is going better than I would have hoped. And, you know, I've made it 10 months. They haven't fired me yet. So far, so good.
Director, I'd like to thank you for joining us again today.
Thanks, Tom. It's been great being with you.
That was Director Patrick Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System. We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or suggestion for a topic you'd like to discuss, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us to send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, VFW Department Commander Frank Pressfield, Colonel Don Kaprowski from the St. Paul District of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, Director Patrick Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, Commissioner Larry Shelato of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we hear the story of one of our state's true heroes, Silver Star recipient Corporal Ethan Nagel. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.